up and being polite. I'm Valerie, host of Canadian Creepies, the podcast that digs up stories polite history would rather forget. Cold cases that never found justice, haunted places that refuse to stay quiet, and folklore with a dark side you've probably never heard. If true crime, paranormal mysteries, and unsettling Canadian history are your thing, you'll want to tune in. New episodes every week wherever you get your podcasts. Canadian Creepies, exploring and exposing the shadows of the true north. Hi, this is Valerie from Canadian Creepies, and you're listening to Star on Creepy Shit Podcast. Hey there, lovers of the weird. Welcome back to Creepy Shit Podcast. And I am really, like, I have been on this mission with my research to try and get into locations and stuff like that, just to dig deeper and get a feel for myself as much as I can. Now, granted, I can't always buy plane tickets and hop off to New York or go down to New Orleans as much as I would love to, you know. Maybe one day. I mean, it is the dream to be able to travel and research, but I digress. So I got onto this thing. I made a girls' day out of my daughter and my mom and I, and we went out to Peshtigo, which is a very small town in my home state of Wisconsin. And as you know, I love to explore all the other states, but I always love coming back home and sharing history and hauntings with you from my state, because seriously? I mean, Wisconsin, I mean, we've got more serial killers and more fucked up shit than ever that happens in this state, I swear. But what I found out when I went to go and check out what we're going to talk about today, which is the Great Peshtigo Fire, and you probably have never even heard of it because it got swallowed by the Chicago Fire incident, and it happened on the same day. And we're going to dive more into that in a minute. But the curator at this place had so much incredible information, and she was very open and willing to chat, which was so awesome, because one of my biggest fears when I go out to a location is that I'm going to get shut down, or that I'm going to have to kind of hide what I'm actually doing. And I don't want to lie. One, I really suck at it. Like, I really do. If you know me at all, you'll know immediately when I'm lying. So, but here's what I found. I took some extra notes on this because when I do an episode, just to give you a little 411 background, when I am outlining and making notes for an episode, I am probably about 12 episodes, well, maybe not quite that much, but I'm probably at least 5 or 6 episodes ahead compared to where I'm recording. So I'm recording right now. This is episode 13, but I'm actually already working and outlining episode 21. And it's like, it's crazy how that works, but it's just how I work. So anyway, if I could open my bloody phone here to cooperate with me, that'd be fucking great. All right, here we go. So what's interesting, a couple of takeaways that I had on this was 2 weeks earlier, a fire did break out in Peshtigo 2 weeks before this huge one, and it was relatively significant. And it actually took out their telegraph communication system. So you're going to need to remember that, because it's going to be very important when we get to the fire that we're going to talk about that does happen 2 weeks later. Also, the curator, like I mentioned, was very open, and she was very open about paranormal activity, which I thought was so cool. And I thanked her so much for that, because like some people, you know, you got to know your audience, right? Like when you go out and you don't know always if how they're going to respond. And she was very forthcoming with it. And she told me that she had an incident, and I do have a picture of this room, and I did post it. It's a room. It's the children's room, because the museum itself is in an old church, which they had to transplant, which is so crazy cool. And when they set it on the foundation, they set it backwards, which was just, oh my gosh, if a woman would have been doing that, it wouldn't have happened. I'm just saying, whatever. Yep, call me a feminist. It's totally fine. I don't care. But anyway, so they had to reposition the church, which was really interesting as well. And they did it in half a day, which was so wild. But anyway, so there's this room and it's the kids' room. So like when kids are crying, you know, you take at church, you take them into this room, whatever. This room gave me the fucking creeps. Like, not okay. First of all, it's filled with dolls, which, and like old timey dolls, which we all know are most likely haunted. Like, I would say you easily have like a 60-40% chance of them being haunted, just saying. So my curator told me that she had this incident with one of the tiny dolls where it was in that room. She swears it was in that room. She knows she saw it. And she, like, after a little while, had to use the restroom. And the restrooms at the museum are really cool, too, because they are old confessional booths, which I think is just kind of funny. But anyway, so she goes into the bathroom and she sees this doll and it has like a loose head and the head was sitting beside the body. And she says, now, there were other like kids and stuff, but those areas are very well roped off. And the likelihood of another kid like snagging it, I mean, they would have had to gone under and into that room in order to get it. And she does not recall seeing any sort of issues like that with any of the guests or the members that were at the museum. So I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of creepy. And when we went downstairs to the basement, this place has such a weird vibe in the basement. There is definitely a vibe, without a doubt. And I will definitely say there was definitely a temperature fluctuation that I felt. Now, I know it's a basement, so I'm like, well, but I will say from one room across to the other room, which was just a threshold separation, and it was still open, and you have to see this to probably really properly understand it, there was definitely a difference. And I was kind of leery about even going through, but I did. So, and let me assure you, I'm okay. I had salt and black obsidian with me. It was all good. So let's really start to get into this, because the specifics and the history and the hauntings that come with this are fucked. Like, seriously. Wow. I can't say it enough. So we're going to talk about this Peshtigo fire. And you need to go grab your favorite bevy or whatever cup gets you through, because we're diving in right now. Let's talk more action, right? Okay, so you know, and everyone and their grandmother knows about the Great Chicago Fire of 1871. Mrs. O'Leary's cow, the whole nine yards, right? But here's the thing that kind of chaps my bottom. On that exact same night, October 8th, 1871, there was another fire, a fire that killed even more people, and a fire so goddamn apocalyptic that survivors described it as literally hell on earth. And most people have never even heard of it. So like I said before, we're talking about the Great Peshtigo Fire. And folks, this isn't just a history lesson today about tragic death and destruction. This is about what happens when that much trauma, that much terror gets burned into a place so deep that it never really leaves. So I want to paint a picture for you real fast. It's 1871 and it's Peshtigo, Wisconsin. It's a booming lumber town. We're talking sawmills working around the clock, railroad tracks cutting through pristine forests, and the kind of frontier optimism that made people think they could tame anything that nature threw at them. Well, you know, the summer of 1871 was dry AF, like so hot. And I mean drought conditions that would make a meteorologist weep. Like the forests were basically kindling and waiting for a spark. And there were sparks everywhere. Locomotives throwing off embers, slash piles from logging operations that were smoldering, people burning brush to clear land. So, you know, this isn't boding well for the wonderful, sweet town of Peshtigo right now. Like, not good. And, you know, this is back in 1871. So it's not like, you know, they had, you know, Smokey the Bear or anything to tell them what was up, you know. So now, from everything I've researched on this, from the historical accounts to the modern day reports, there is something about this place that goes beyond just tragic history. People who visit consistently report an unsettling atmosphere that can't be easily explained away. And the thing about the Peshtigo fire is that it wasn't just a fire. Scientists now think it was what they call a firestorm. And yes, by the way, fire NATOs really do exist. And it has been talked about that this is what happened because the winds and the conditions for this fire were perfect. And although fire NATOs are rare, which if you don't know what a fire NATO is, it's a fire and a tornado together. Basically, it's just crazy. It's a tornado that's made of flames. And there were winds at that time reported over 100 miles an hour and temperature hot enough to melt metal. Flames that jumped across like the Lake Michigan and the Bay of Green Bay, like it was a puddle, because this did end up stretching. It went 16 miles across the bay over into like the Door County area, which is the peninsula, not the upper peninsula, the main peninsula to Wisconsin. So it's just wild. And it, just to give you another little picturesque to think about this forest fire, it's all pine. So you've got winds of over 100 miles an hour. You've got dry temperatures of approximately also 100 degrees. And I think it was slightly over. I think it was like 103 that day from what the curator had said. And you have pine. So if you've got pine, you've got sap. And this fire wound up blazing at over 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. So you've got all that. Not to mention now, it's not only raining ash, it's raining hot sap into this ground and onto people who are trying to flee. Like, that is absolutely horrific. That is horrific. So we're going to get into all this. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little ahead of myself too. So, but on the night of October 8th at around 9:30, that firestorm hit Peshtigo like the wrath of God himself. So imagine this. You're sitting in your lovely, cute little wooden cabin, maybe reading by lamplight, and suddenly the sky turns orange. Not sunset orange, hell orange. A kind of orange that makes your primitive brain scream, run. Survivors, and I'm going to be honest here, you guys, there weren't many, described hearing the fire before they even saw it. A roaring sound like a freight train mixed with screams of every demon in hell. Trees exploding like bombs, and the air itself catching fire. People ran for the Peshtigo River, and here's where it gets really messed up. The river was their salvation, and also their nightmare rolled into one. Families stood neck deep in water for hours, watching their entire world burn around them. Parents held their children above water while embers the size of dinner plates fell like deadly snow. Some didn't make it to the river. Some were caught in their homes, in their beds, in their yards. The fire moved so fast that people were found the next day with no burn marks. They died from breathing the superheated air that cooked their lungs from the inside out. That is horrifying. Absolutely horrifying. When morning came, Peshtigo was gone. Just gone. Not burned down. It was vaporized. Over 1,200 people died in a single night. Entire families were wiped out. And here's the kicker. Some people just vanished. No bodies, no trace. They were there 1 minute, and then they weren't. Now, you might be thinking, okay, tragic historical event, but what about the ghosts? Well, buckle in, because it's about to get really interesting. So the Peshtigo Fire Cemetery actually sits right behind the museum. Excuse me. And it's right in the heart of the town. And according to multiple visitor accounts, it's not your typical peaceful resting place. There's a mass grave there and a single monument marking where they buried hundreds of fire victims that couldn't be identified. So charred remains, families destroyed so completely that no one was left to claim the bodies. Now, I will tell you, I have been in the cemetery as well. And in my opinion, now granted, I went during the day. I didn't go at night. But if I felt peace anywhere in that place, it was in the cemetery. So I didn't feel like the cemetery was creepy at all. I actually found it really fascinating. And I think it was more fascinating, in my opinion, than the museum itself on the inside. Because outside, they've got these plaques and dedications and stuff all around for different tombstones. And it was just so fascinating to read some of the stories and what had really happened. Seriously, you need to go check it out. So multiple visitors have reported unusual temperature drops around the mass grave marker, and even during warm weather. These aren't ghost tour groups or people expecting to find something spooky. These are often people who had no prior experience or knowledge of the cemetery's reputation. But it's the documented reports from visitors that really paint the picture here. And I'm not talking about the ghost tour stuff, teenagers trying to spook each other. I'm talking about documented accounts from grown adults, skeptics even, people who had no idea about the cemetery's reputation. There's actually one account that honestly really struck me, and it was a woman named Sarah, and this is from a Historical Society interview, not like a paranormal blog or anything like that, who visited the cemetery in 2003 while researching some of her family genealogy. And she had no idea about any ghost stories. She was just looking for relatives who might have died in the fire. And Sarah described seeing a woman in a long, dark dress walking between the headstones, looking down at each grave marker like she was searching for something. The woman appeared to be maybe in her 30s. Her hair was pulled back. The clothes that just looked kind of wrong or too old-fashioned for the day, according to what Sarah said. And when she tried to approach to ask if the woman needed help, she just vanished and wasn't there anymore. But here's the kicker. Sarah described the exact same apparition that at least six other people have reported seeing over the years. Same dress, same searching behavior, same sudden disappearance. We're talking about people who visited years apart, had no contact with each other, and gave nearly identical descriptions. Now, local historical society has collected dozens of these reports. People see figures in 1870s clothing wandering the cemetery, particularly women who appear to be looking for something or someone. And that is so sad because when I think about that, I'm thinking like, okay, if it's a woman, like, are you looking for your child? Are you looking for your kids? Like, oh, I so hope not. But seriously. Okay. So let's think about this for a second. Like, if you died in that fire, if your family was scattered to the wind or burned beyond recognition, wouldn't you still be looking for them? Like, wouldn't you be trying to find the people that you loved? Now, I want to talk a little bit more about the Peshtigo Fire Museum, which is housed in one of the few buildings that, like the fire. Okay, so the church itself did not make it through the fire. Okay, but the foundation remained. And so they found a church that got shipped over, and because many believe that like the church is the only thing that survived, and it's not. Everything was demolished. Everything. Nothing made it through this fire. However, fun fact, if you are of Catholic descent, and I have a picture of this too that I'll need to post, the tabernacle from the church before it burned did make it. And so did the priest, which is just very fascinating. And he actually wrote a book, and the book is astounding. It is his entire story of what he saw and what he experienced. It is wild. It's a very thin book, but it is worth it. You can pick it up at the museum. Just saying, again, I get no kickback on any of this. This is just honest to goodness, like, suggestions for you. So, if you get a chance, I would highly recommend that. So, okay, I got to back this up for just a second. I lost my place in my notes. I'm sorry. I'm getting like so off topic with this. And I hope that you're all staying with me on this. So give me just a second. The museum staff, and these are professional, no-nonsense, historical society folks, have documented some seriously unsettling phenomena. Voices calling for help when the building is empty. Footsteps on the upper floors during closing time when everyone's accounted for downstairs. And that smell. Visitors and staff consistently report a smell when there's no source anywhere in the building. And I will admit, when I was down in the basement, that's where I smelt it. And I don't know what it was. It wasn't sulfur or anything like typical like that you hear in haunted places. I can't describe it. It wasn't a basement smell. It was just weird. So one of the most compelling accounts comes from a former museum director who worked there for 15 years. And she described hearing what sounded like multiple people talking urgently in the main exhibit room. And this is a pretty big floor. Like, it's a very large floor. But when she would go and check like where it was coming from, it would be totally empty. Nobody was around. And security cameras never picked anything up. But the audio was clear enough that she could sometimes make out individual words like help, fire, where are they, Oh, that's so sad. Where are they? And the really fucked up part, this happened most frequently during the autumn months, especially in October around the anniversary of the fire. Now, staff members have also reported exhibits being moved or rearranged overnight, like I shared with you about the doll in the beginning. Photos shifted in their frames. Display cases opened when they had been securely locked. Always small things, nothing destructive, more like someone was trying to get the attention or communicate something. But the cemetery and the museum aren't the only places where the past refuses to stay buried. Throughout the Peshtigo area, people report seeing unexplained fires, what locals have started calling the phantom flames. These sightings go back decades. Forest service workers, hunters, locals driving home late, they all report seeing orange glows in the woods that appear briefly and then they vanish. When investigated, there's never any evidence of an actual fire. No burn marks, no heat signatures, no smoke residue. What? What? Like, that is so messed up. Like, I can't. So, there's also a documented report from 1987. A Wisconsin DNR officer was patrolling an area on October 8th when he saw what appeared to be a significant forest fire about a half a mile off the main road. So, he called it in, grabbed his radio and suppression gear and headed toward the flames. But as he got closer, the orange glow just disappeared, like someone had turned off a light switch. Do 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 do. So when the fire department arrived to investigate it, they found nothing. There was no evidence of fire, no explanation for what the officer had seen. But here's what gets me. The same officer later learned that he'd been looking at the exact area where part of the original 1871 fire had burned the hottest. What? Oh my gosh, seriously. Like, that's my word for this episode. Like, remember Pee-wee Herman's Playhouse? Today's secret word is, well, it's seriously. So, more recent reports, which actually came in 2019, describe a similar phenomena. A family camping in the area called 911 after seeing what they thought was a forest fire on the horizon. Emergency responders found no fire, but three different families camping in different locations had all called in the same sighting at the same time. Oh, just like I got goosies on that. Like, oh, my hair just stood on end, folks. Like, damn. Like, whew, that's intense. Okay. So you can't tell me like that. Oh my gosh, that is just crazy. Phantom flames. Like, and how freaking scary is that? Like, seriously, I would not want that. This is why I don't camp in tents, okay? I'm a glamper and I'm proud of it and I'm not ashamed. So, whew, some of the most chilling reports involve disembodied voices warning people of danger. These accounts span over a century and come from people with no knowledge or any other like similar reports. In 1934, a logging crew working north of Peshtigo during a particularly dry season reported hearing voices in the wind shouting, "Fire, fire, run!" when there was no fire anywhere in the area. None at all. Just, yelling stuff. So the crew foreman wrote in his log that the voices were so clear and urgent that his men actually stopped working and looked around for the source. Oh, like, oh my gosh, I have got serious goosebumps on this, you guys. Like, whoo, this is intense. Okay. So similar reports pop up every few years. hikers hear urgent warnings to flee. And fun fact, you can go on the fire trail. You can definitely do that. I had my daughter with me, and just based upon some of these reports, I'm like, we're not going to go there. But I still have hopes to either like go back with my mom or go with my husband even, because I know he would be into it. And you can absolutely hike it. So the camp, and you know, just maybe don't go on October 8th. Just a thought. So campers are told to go get the water. Like they hear stuff like that all the time. And in every case, the voices seem to be trying to protect people from a danger that isn't even there, or maybe from a danger that happened 150 years ago, but left such a deep psychic scar that it's still trying to save lives. Like that kind of reminds me a little bit of that episode we did earlier of the ghost flight of 401, where they're really trying to protect people. That's the vibe that I get in this as well, which I think is, I think that's just incredible. I honestly do. I think if an apparition or some sort of spirit is bound and determined to do whatever they can to never let that happen again to anybody else, oh my gosh, like that is so incredibly noble and so selfless. And that is your choice of how you spend your afterlife. That's heroic. That is absolutely positively heroic and just beautiful, in my opinion. Okay, so a 2008 report was filed with local authorities that describes a family on a camping trip who heard multiple voices shouting warnings about a fire. They got so fucking flipped out that they packed up and left immediately, even though there was no sign of danger. And the next day, this is so fucked. Okay, get ready. The next day, a lightning strike caused a small wildfire in the exact area that they had been camping. Fucking Christ, are you serious? Like, first of all, bravo on leaving and listening. Like, absolutely. Honestly, like, would you have bailed? Like, would you have bailed? Yes or no? Like, I gotta know that. So, is it a coincidence? Maybe. Do I think it's a coincidence? Fuck no, it's not. It's absolutely, like, you can't explain that. And I also don't believe in coincidences. So there you go. But when you see patterns like that repeating over decades, skeptics out there, doesn't that make you wonder? Honestly, like, doesn't that make you wonder? Okay. So the Peshtigo River, it flows into Green Bay, and the bay played a crucial role during the fires. Families stood in the water for hours, watching their whole world burn. Some didn't make it. Some drowned or died from exposure or simply couldn't hold on because they were hanging on to like wooden, like beaver dams. Like they're hanging on to whatever they can, and you know your grip is bound to give out at some point, especially with a current. So modern witnesses near the bay, particularly around sunset, report seeing figures emerging from the water, people in period clothing appearing wet and burned, standing at the shoreline for a few moments before disappearing. These apparitions are most commonly reported during October, and witnesses describe them as looking confused or lost. I don't know about you, but I want to see that. Like, I would want to see that. So a fishing guide who's worked, you know, the bay for a while, for like well over 20 years, told the local paper in 2018 that he's seen these figures at least a dozen times, always the same, people in old-fashioned clothes standing waist-deep in the water, looking towards shore like they're waiting for something. When he tries to approach to offer help, thinking they might be in trouble, they're just gone. So let's think about that for a second. He's seeing this in the Bay of Green Bay. I totally believe him. And obviously, these apparitions are so strong that they look like a real person, not just a like see-through ghostly like figure. So holy shit, right? The fishing guide's description matches historical accounts of fire survivors who stood in the bay waters for hours, some holding children above their heads, some supporting elderly relatives, maybe some that are still there, still waiting for help that never quite came out of the water. So the Chicago, and we're going to switch gears just a little bit here. The Chicago and Northwestern Railroad was both salvation and destruction during the Peshtigo Fire. Some trains managed to evacuate survivors to safety. Others were caught by the flames, becoming rolling death traps. Along the old rail routes, many now are abandoned or converted to the trails. People report hearing phantom trains, the sound of locomotives, and the desperate voices of passengers. But there's no train in sight. Local railroad historians have documented these reports for decades. What makes these accounts particularly compelling is the specificity. Witnesses don't just hear generic train sounds. They describe like a very specific whistle pattern of the old steam engines, the particular rhythm of wheels or the jointed rails they used back then. These are sounds that most modern people wouldn't even know how to fake anymore. Like, this can't be done in AI, people. Then a 2015 report describes a couple hiking the converted rail trail who heard what sounded like a train approaching from behind them. They stepped off the trail to let it pass, but nothing came. The sounds continued for several minutes, the whistle, the engine, voices calling out, before fading away. When they researched the history later, they learned that a rescue train had tried to evacuate people along the exact same route, but had been overtaken by the fire, and everyone on board died in that train. Oh my gosh. Okay. So not all of the paranormal activity around Peshtigo is terrifying. There are numerous accounts of what locals call the helpful spirits, apparitions that seem to guide people to safety when they're lost in the woods around the fire area, just like I was saying before. So these reports typically involve people who are hiking or hunting and become disoriented in the dense forests. They describe seeing a figure, usually a woman or an older man, who appears ahead of them on the trail, and they're leading them back toward familiar landmarks or roads. When they try to thank their guide and try to catch up to them, the figure vanishes. Now, a 2015 report filed with the Wisconsin Paranormal Research Group describes a family whose car broke down on the back road near Peshtigo during a snowstorm. Oh, God, in fucking winter here is no picnic either. So this summer especially totally blows. And yeah, our winters are not all that great either. I totally reside around like 40 to 72 degrees. Anything above or below is just a personal attack, in my opinion, but whatever. So anyway, this family, they were walking through the woods looking for help when they saw an elderly man in old-fashioned clothes. Now, a little bit about this story that seems just a little weird to me is, why would you walk into the woods to look for help? That's the only thing. I'm like, why would you do that? But again, this is a documented filed report. So let me back up. They were walking through the woods looking for help. They saw an elderly man in old-fashioned clothes who gestured for them to follow him. He led them directly to a main road where they could flag down assistance. When they turned to thank him, he was gone. The family later learned that they'd been led away from an area where several people had died during the original fire, trying to escape through the same woods. Now, there's also another account, and this one's actually pretty recent. This was in 2020 and involves a lost hunter who was guided to safety by what he described as a woman in a long coat. She appeared whenever he started to head in the wrong direction, always pointing him back to safety. When he finally made it back to his truck, he turned to wave goodbye, but she vanished. These helpful spirits seem to be doing what they couldn't do in life, and that's saving people from danger they themselves couldn't escape. So what is it about the Peshtigo fire that seems to have burned itself permanently into the landscape? Why are people still seeing, hearing, experiencing echoes of that night 150 years later? I think it comes down to the sheer scale of the trauma, in my opinion, because we're talking about 1,200 people dying in a single night in an area that probably had a total population of maybe 3,000. And that's not just a tragedy. That's a near complete destruction of a community. Entire family lines were wiped out. People had no time to say goodbye because this fire was spreading and the winds were going at 100 miles per hour. Again, a firenado. No time to process what was happening to them. From a paranormal perspective, and yeah, you guys know I'm a believer, I'll own that. Extreme trauma can leave what researchers call residual energy. So if you're new to the paranormal world, that's what that is. And that's what residual energy means. So think of it like a psychic stain that soaks into a place so deep, it becomes part of the environment. The more sudden and intense the trauma, the stronger the residual energy. But there's something else that's going on here with Peshtigo, something that goes beyond just residual hauntings. There aren't just replays of past events. The warning voices, the helpful spirits guiding people to safety, these suggest conscious entities that are still actively trying to help the living. Maybe the people who died in that fire are still there because they couldn't let go. Maybe they're still trying to save others from the horror that they experienced. Maybe love and protective instinct are stronger than death. There's a thought. So here's something that really drives home the reality of what's happening here in Peshtigo. The anniversary effect. Almost every paranormal report from the area is more intense during October, particularly around October 8th. Local law enforcement and fire departments have noticed an uptick in calls about mysterious fires and strange sightings every year around the anniversary. The museum reports increased activity. The cemetery gets more reports of apparitions at that time. It's like the entire area becomes more active as that date approaches. This isn't confirmation bias or people psyching themselves up because they know the date. Many of the witnesses don't realize the significance of the timing until after they report their experience. The pattern becomes clear when you look at the data over time. So emergency services have started unofficially preparing for increased calls during the first 2 weeks of October. They don't advertise that fact, obviously, but the pattern is consistent enough that they've learned to expect it. So in recent years, several paranormal investigation teams have studied the Peshtigo area and using like modern equipment. And the results have definitely been interesting. EMF detectors consistently register unusual electromagnetic spikes in the cemetery and the museum areas. Digital thermometers record sudden temperature drops of like anywhere between 15 to 20 degrees in specific locations. And honestly, based on my experience there, I would say that is absolutely accurate for a drop in temperature. It is very significant. And then, of course, there's audio equipment that picks up the voices and sounds that aren't audible to the human ear in real time. Now, one investigation in 2019 captured what appears to be a conversation between multiple people speaking urgently through the words, are difficult to make out. Voice analysis suggests at least three different speakers, two women, one man. The recording was made in the museum after hours when the building was empty and secured. But here's what I find most compelling. The investigation teams that approached the area with respect and genuine interest in documenting the phenomena tend to capture more evidence. Again, it's about respect. It's about respect. Those who come in looking to debunk or get the thrill and sensationalize, they often leave empty-handed. It's almost like the spirits can sense intention. And I would absolutely agree with that statement. I really think so. Because let me tell you something. If I was a ghost and someone was coming in to wherever I was haunting and they're just being a bunch of fucks, yeah, I ain't giving them shit. Or I'm going to scare them so bad that they're never going to come back. One of the two. Or if someone comes in with respect and genuine curiosity to learn and grow, I'm going to give them a very nice show. I'm going to give them a very nice show. Just saying. So more likely, like if they can feel that intention, it's like they'll only reveal themselves to people who genuinely want to understand what happened and honor the memory of those who died. And absolutely. So look, I know some of you listening might be rolling your eyes a little bit, and I can understand that. Mass hysteria suggestion, people seeing what they want to see. And hey, maybe you're right as far as a skeptic is concerned. But chances are, if you are a skeptic, you're probably not listening to this show in the first place. So, but I believe the dead don't always leave quietly. I believe that sometimes trauma burns so deep into a place that it becomes part of its DNA. And I believe that love and protective instinct can survive even in death. The people who died in the Peshtigo fire weren't ready to go. They were parents trying to save their children, spouses looking for each other in chaos, neighbors helping neighbors. Like, goddamn, wouldn't that be nice to have that again in life? Because let's be honest, that doesn't happen too often anymore. Like, I would love it. Like, and I'm very grateful. Like, we fortunately have a lovely neighbors across the street from us, and I love them dearly. But how often do you really take care of your neighbor or look out for your neighbor anymore? You know, like that's incredible. That kind of love doesn't just evaporate because somebody's body died. What we're seeing in Peshtigo isn't malevolent or scary. It's honestly heartbreaking. It's evidence that human connection and care can transcend death itself. These spirits aren't trying to frighten anyone. They're trying to help, still trying to save lives, still searching for people they loved. So the next time you're driving through northern Wisconsin and you see a strange glow in the woods or hear voices warning you of danger when there's no one around, maybe don't dismiss that quite so quickly. Maybe someone who died 150 years ago is still looking out for you. The Peshtigo Fire was the deadliest wildfire in American history, and it's a tragedy that deserves to be remembered. But it's also a place where the veil between the living and the dead seems permanently thin, where the past refuses to stay buried. And whether you believe in ghosts or not, the documented experiences of hundreds of people over the decades paint a picture of a place where something extraordinary is actually happening, something that challenges our understanding of death, memory, and the power of human connection. If you're ever in the area, please go visit this. Please visit the cemetery. Stop by the museum. Walk through those streets and through the trails and the forest. But do it respectfully. Remember that if the stories are true, you're walking among people who died horribly and may still be trying to help others avoid the same fate. The dead of Peshtigo aren't at rest, and maybe that is okay. Maybe some loves are too strong to be extinguished. Maybe some protective instincts are too powerful to be silenced by the grave. All right, you guys, that's all I've got for today. And I will catch you next week. Thank you so much for being here. I would love to hear your thoughts on today's episode. If you want to reach out to me over on Instagram, please do so at creepy_shit_podcast. At creepy shit podcast. And fun fact, you guys, I now got a TikTok. I can't believe I got a TikTok, but I got a TikTok, and now I'm doing the TikTok thing. And it's weird, and I'm not great at it, but it's there. So you can check it out there too. And I love connecting with all of you. I am so grateful to each and every one of you for listening. It means the world. I cannot say it enough. So until next week, remember, sometimes the creepiest shit is also the truest. Bye.